I've entitled the message for this evening, A Harvest That Reaps Confidence. This psalm, as you'll note, speaks of a time of abundance, a time of ample provision, and it could well have been written on an occasion of a Jewish equivalent of a harvest festival. Confidence in God's harvest. Confidence is a good thing, but it can also be an evil thing. It's good in the sense that to be rightly proud of God-given talents and gifts that are used in His service is to be a blessing. But confidence, so often we tend to try and find in other things. We overemphasize our need to be gifted, our need to be talented. And if we are successful, that breeds pride of the wrong sort, where we focus upon ourselves and our achievements. And if we fail in life, we blame ourselves, we become almost morbid, introspective, thinking of ourselves so negatively. But the confidence God calls us to isn't located in us and in our abilities. One of the problems that we must recognize is that there are so many things in life that are outside of our control, whatever our gifts, whatever our abilities. None of us can see what illness is around the corner or the accident that is soon to happen. None of us can anticipate those things any more than you can arrest the course of the sun going across the world. Where then is our confidence to be placed? And this psalm directs us to where our confidence should be. The psalm is a psalm that is sung, but it's also a prayer. Much of the psalms can be used for prayer. And this is a prayer of confidence in God's deliverance. You see the title above the passage, if you've got a church Bible, The God of Our Salvation, though not part of the original. It's a title that's apt. It speaks of God's deliverance. And the psalmist has confidence in God. He believes it is necessary to look to one beyond himself. What are the grounds for such confidence in God? We're going to look at three things from the passage. The first thing we're going to look at is the confidence the psalmist has in God's presence. Okay? A confidence the psalmist has in God's presence. In verse 1, the very first verse there, we have the phrase, praise. Praise is due to you, O God, in Zion. Now that's praise, that phrase of praise is due to you is right. It's in recognition that God bountifully provides our very breaths are sustained by God, and it's right to express that we are to give God honor. But actually, literally, the phrase is different. It says, praise is silence for you. Praise is silence for you. The idea being that we are in the presence of God to be in awe of Him. We fall silent before Him. If we have a deep impression of God's presence, then there's a sense in which we are quiet and still. Now, what would cause such an occasion for David to sing and to pray like that? Well, this psalm, its occasion of when it was written, we can't be certain, but it is thought that it may well have been written after a period of prolonged famine, a period where the land was not yielding the abundance that we see before us here this evening. And there's an account in the book of Samuel of a period of 3 years of famine. And the reason that famine was brought about upon the nation of Israel was because of the actions of a king of Israel, King Saul, who broke a promise. He broke a promise to spare the lives of a certain foreign tribe, the Gibeonites. So brutal was Saul's treatment of them that this group of people were displaced, permanently displaced. They were a homeless people, which God saw as unjust. upon what Saul had done. And he judged the nation of Israel. And he brought it to the attention of David. And David, what is he to do? He is acting as king. He is the one responsible. He has the burden of a nation upon his shoulders. What does he do? Does he look to himself? Does he try to stir up within himself strength to cope? No, he looks in confidence to God. He reminds himself of who God is. We see this in verse 3. He says, "When iniquities prevail against me, you atone for our transgressions." He reminds himself here of God at work, God providing, God covering. That word atone literally means to cover. You cover something when you want to protect it. You want to protect it maybe from the rain, from the elements, or you want to hide it from view. Either way, you want to cover it from exposure that could be harmful. David's confidence comes from the God who, in that sense, covers him from harm. The harm of his sin, the harm of the sins of a nation. God is his confidence. And he believes that he will protect him and shield him. His confidence is no different in some way from that we all experience if we have children. Children will come to us, my own children included, when they've got a problem in life. They'll come to us because they want an issue solved. They can't grasp. They don't know how to fix it. They don't know how to deal with it. They're looking for an answer to something that is too complicated for them to solve. And they seek, in a sense, protection in our presence. They're coming to our presence for answers, for help, for guidance, for where else could they turn? And David is coming into the presence of God for direction, for help, for confidence in his ability to deliver, his ability to answer prayer. And we see in Psalm 91, a psalm that speaks of the God who covers, the God who shelters, which is the God that David has confidence in. "He who dwells in the shelter of the Most High will abide in the shadow of the Almighty. I will say to the Lord, my refuge and my fortress, my God in whom I trust, for he will deliver you from the snare of the fowler and from the deadly pestilence." That is the confidence of one in prayer who is looking to God. David had that confidence. The next point we could have up. Confidence is knowing I can go to the God who will protect me. I can go to him at any time and be confident that he is able to act and he's able to work in whatever situation I may face. David's confidence was in the presence of God. How so do we know his presence? In verse 4, we see him being in the courts of the Lord. "Blessed is the one you choose and bring near to dwell in your courts." A court, a temple. Here is the picture of one where God is present. And in a dwelling, you are there to be protected from the elements outside, aren't you? You are shielded from what is outside. And there's a sense in which God is bringing to our attention here. David is coming to him for that protection in the presence of God, which otherwise he might be broken in feeling that he is overwhelmed by the expectations of those upon him, of a nation that expects him to deliver answers. But David knows he doesn't have the answers, but God does. He comes to God in his presence. And knowing the presence of God opens up a vista of possibilities, of confidence in what God will do. When you are in the presence of God, your perspective on any problem in life will change, I can guarantee it. Being near to him, you will look less to yourself and more to him. Your expectation of what you are capable of will dim, but your hope in what he will fulfill will grow. Knowing his presence brings courage. If we realize his presence, we know that we have enough, that we can take risks that without him we are too afraid to take. We can go out into the world and to face difficulties, problems, that we otherwise are unable to do so without that confidence in God. You see here, when he's in the presence of God in verse 4, what does he say? He says, I shall be satisfied with the goodness of your house, the holiness of your temple. Goodness assures that I can take risks. Goodness assures that I can take risks. His goodness. If I know that he is good, if I'm confident through knowing him, being in his presence, I can go forward in life with all of its challenges and have the strength, because the strength isn't in myself, it's in him. In the presence of God, David is satisfied. He doesn't have to hold back because he knows that God is a God who can provide, a God who can fulfill more than he can imagine or envisage. It means that when we look more to him and less to ourselves, when we are in his presence, we can be more generous, we can be a people who do not hold back, because we believe that God will satisfy and give more than we can possibly give of ourselves. God always outgives our giving. Confidence in his presence means that I also can have a confidence in his power. We see that in verse 5. Confidence of God's power. By awesome deeds, you answer us with righteousness, O God of our salvation, the hope of all the ends of the earth and of the farthest seas. This confidence that David has comes from this verse, in verse 5, where it says, the hope of all the nations, literally means the confidence of all the nations. The confidence of all the nations will ultimately hold itself in God alone, in him who is the God of our salvation. It's true, I think, to say that there's a danger in that the older you get, the more cynical you may be tempted to become in life. Why? Well, when you're 20 or so, your experience of life is fairly narrow. For an example, when you marry someone, you're young in that relationship. You don't know the other person. You have high hopes, high expectations. You start off married life, knowing a little bit about the other person and they a little bit about you. But as the early years develop, you begin to realize that the person you thought you married is a little bit different from the person you actually married. And, you know, it's a true fact that those early years are a very testing period for marriage. Most divorces occur within the first few years of married life. People can become cynical because they get disappointed. Secrets come out and they become disillusioned with life. Can only not only be in a marriage, it can be just in the workplace as well. Depending on what work you have, you might see many troubles in life, many people who make promises and then break them, whose lives seem to be full of disappointment, and you grow cynical with them and with the world. And your judgment is that this world is not trustworthy. Well, David, in his attitude to God, is one who sticks with God through the early years and through all the years of his life. His confidence in God isn't broken. He believes that God reigns over the nations. How can we have that same attitude and not be caught up with that disillusionment and disappointment in life that can harden the heart? Put your trust in the one who answers you in righteousness. If you look again at verse 5, by awesome deeds you answer us with righteousness, O God of our salvation. The cynical person always thinks he is right or she is right. And when things are going well, it maybe looks like he's in control. But when things are going bad, he feels powerless. Things no longer seem that they are right. For David, confidence in God was both in the times that were good and in the times that were bad. And we see this in verses 6 and 7. You see, the earth, the face of the earth, has two poles. It has the north and the south pole. And David's perspective has two poles upon God, confidence in God, that we must face the rightness of God's power in one of two ways. Verse 6, in that God is strong and that he can provide security for us. David looks to God for security. But he also, though in times of blessing, in times of richness, he gives thanks and praise to God, he also knows this world is an unpredictable world. And we see that in verse 7, where it's given the illustration of a sea that is roaring, a picture of chaos in the ancient world. The sea was a place that brought imagery of unpredictability, of danger. And here we have David, yet still confident of God's awesome deeds in his righteousness, that the confidence of the ends of the earth and of the farthest seas will look to him. Both in times of stability, like in the mountains that we see here, the strength of the mountains, unmovable, that image of life going well, life that makes sense perhaps, but also in the chaos of the seas when things are uncertain. In both, he has confidence in God's power. How can we access this confidence in God's power? If we could have the point, please. The rightness of God is seen in times of both stability and uncertainty. And how can we access this confidence? Well, the answer is in that expression of verse 5, through the word awesome deeds. By awesome deeds you answer us. That word awesome is an expression of praise. It's an expression of wonder to God. He had confidence in God that was in God's power, that was linked to God's presence. You remember when he was in the presence of God, he fell silent before God, in awe of him, in awe of his greatness. And through that, he also was brought to see that he could have confidence in God's power, in God at work, both in the good times and in the bad times. Praise brings us into his presence and reminds us that we have come before a God who we are to fear. The word awe literally comes from the word to fear. We come before a God who isn't puny, who isn't weak. We come to a God who is powerful, a God like no other. We cannot imagine a God who is not cut short in his ability to answer and to arrest any situation that we might be in. But he always does so in his wisdom. We fear him because of the greatness of who he is. But that fear, if we are a Christian, brings praise. It brings a recognition of his wonder because he invites us into his presence. And we are blessed, we see in verse 4, when we are near him. It's a wondrous thing to know the power of God and to also in that know and have confidence that God will provide, that God is bountiful. We see that in our last point. We can have confidence in God's provision. It says in verse 11 that you crown the year with your bounty. This may be a reflection of a time of harvest, a kind of harvest festival in the Jewish religious calendar, remembering God's goodness as we're doing this evening. He speaks of the God of the Creator, the one who waters the earth, the one who softens it with showers and blesses its growth. the one who makes the pastures overflow, who provides crops, who provides flocks, you know, all that is needed in life. This rich picture of God in his provision is what's being remembered here. The crown of the year is seen in three things. It's seen in God's blessing, in his transforming, and in his sustaining of his work in creation. We'll first look at his blessing. To look at his blessing. In verse 9, it says that you, O God, you visit the earth and water it. You greatly enrich it. God provides because he's a God who loves to bless. We see right back at the beginning, and we looked at this morning in Genesis, of the one who visited the earth when the world had yet to be completed. It was without form and void. The waters covered the face of the earth. And what did God do when he spoke? He reordered things, he fashioned things, he moved things. We see that account, don't we, from day one to day six. So God at work, reorganizing God's organizing that creation to be what he wanted it to be and what we see before us now. He blesses by ordering things. Just as he orders things here when he visits the earth, he provides. He provides for the corn through providing water that's necessary. He brings an order to things. You'll see that the waters are furrowed, that there's work to be done in reordering the field to make the crops grow, but God blesses. God brings produce from it. It involves, though, us sorting things out, just as it involved God sorting out the early account in creation, reordering things, and our lives need reordering as well. Do we have confidence that when God is reordering our lives, he means it to bless us? He means to work in us. Sometimes it may be uncomfortable. Working in a field, working in a garden can be back-breaking work. It can bring pains and aches that we didn't know existed. And sometimes when God works in reordering our lives, it can bring bruises to us, rise within us, feelings that we would rather shy away from. But yet, he's doing it ultimately to bless us, just as he blessed this his creation here. He also, David, looks at God's transforming, to look at his transforming. You see this in verse 12. The pastures of the wilderness overflow, and the hills gird themselves with joy. You have the picture of a wilderness transformed, changed. The desert is watered. Life bursts forth. Speaks here of a God who's not limited, to working with great potential. He's not a gardener who can only cope with a manicured walled garden. He can work in the most bleak of prospects and bring life from the driest and most barren of grounds. And it seems to be the delight of God that he wants to work in the impossible. He delights to work in ways that the world cannot imagine. People in this life might shrug and say that such and such a person is a hopeless case, and yet God can work in them. Never give up on someone. Never give up. God can, if he can transform a wilderness, he can transform the life of any individual, just as he's transformed the life of us from being one of hardness to one of a heart of flesh, if we know him. He can do it. We can't. He can make life productive where we see no potential. And when he works, not only does he bless, not only does he transform, but he also sustains that which he has brought about. We can look at his sustaining. If we look here at verse 11, take you back to verse 11, the second part there, having seen this blessing, this bounteous harvest of God, he says that your wagon tracks overflow with abundance. That word abundance literally means fatness. Fatness is something that we tend to shy away from. It has high calories and it's not good for us, we're told, you know, and all this sort of thing. But in the ancient world and places like where I've been in Mongolia, fatness of a food is to be prized because, unlike some parts of the world, just as we've been looking at, life can be hard, and any food, any nutrition is valuable, and to have that fatness is something that will sustain someone for a lengthy period of time. And that's the picture here, God sustaining, God providing richly. Here we have then confidence in God's provision. He crowns his creation. He crowns the year with this rich picture of a harvest, of abundance. And there is another crown, a crown that takes us to the New Testament, a crown of one who wore a crown of thorns, Jesus Christ. He, through his suffering and being cursed rather than blessed, worked for us the blessings, the transforming power, the sustaining that was necessary for us to have life, for us to be able to come, as David did, into the presence of God and have confidence that, yes, God will hear me because I have one who has bled and died for me, who has atoned for me, who has covered me of my sins, who protects me from the elements, who shields me, who delivers me. I have confidence, and I know this when I'm in the presence of God. I know then when I'm in the presence of God, I can have confidence in his power, and I can have confidence in the one who will provide, who will save me. The psalmist says that you crown the year with your bounty. This is the God we worship. This is the God that we sing to, that we live for, the God who provides, the God who is rich, but he enriches us through a crown of thorns, a cost to himself, that we might be free, that we might have a confidence that this world cannot grasp. Do you have that confidence in God? Do you hold to that confidence in his power to be at work in your life? Do you have confidence that he will provide all that you need? Let us pray.